You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. In May, two men were convicted of a hate crime for attacking Richmond resident Man Singh Khalsa last September. Before they attacked Khalsa, they threatened to cut off his hair. As a follower of the Sikh faith, spelled S-I-K-H, Khalsa doesn't cut his hair. And like many Sikhs, he ties a turban. Sikhs have often been victims of hate crimes since 9/11, but they faced violence since they set foot on U.S. soil 100 years ago. Today on Cross Currents, reporter Kavalroop Kaur Singh brings us the voices of young Bay Area Sikh Americans and their stories of trauma, healing, and resistance.
Growing up as a Sikh in the Bay Area, I always felt part of a silent community. We are pointed at, stared at, whispered about, yelled at, beaten up, shot at, and sometimes killed. But one thing we almost never are is listened to. When you've been silent for so long, sometimes you forget how to speak. In middle school, people would tell me, "You forgot to shave your legs." I wanted to tell them, "I don't shave because my leg hair is divine." When a white man on BART lunged at me yelling, "You f***ing terrorist," I wanted to yell back. Remember Oak Creek, Wisconsin in 2012 when a white man shot and killed six people in a Sikh temple? It's you who looks like a terrorist, not me. I wanted to unmute myself and my community. My dad always tells me that Sikhs are like potatoes. Potatoes can grow anywhere. They are resilient. So I asked the Sikhs around me, how do we survive in America? I want to share stories of resilience in the Sikh community so at last we can hear ourselves speak. Let's start with Raginder Singh. He was in elementary school when he told his parents he wanted to play the trumpet. They said, "No, you're playing the violin." For them, the violin represented prestige.
Check, check. Ladies and gentlemen, how are you doing tonight?
Now, Singh is an accomplished violinist and composer who goes by the stage name Violinder. But when he first came to the U.S., he was a turban-wearing, Sikh immigrant kid with an accent, trying to go to school in Hayward. He didn't care about prestige. He just needed to make it through the fifth grade.
Walking in the first day of school, you have, you know, the teacher saying, "Hey, here's a kid, and he's going to join our class. And I have a turban," so that's already a lot of eyes on me. A month later, 9/11 happens, and now it's, "Oh, like, go back where you came from. We don't like you here. We don't like your kind," even though they don't know my kind. Kids, other adults, parents of the kids, people went out of their way to tell me that. I remember being at the age and feeling very alone. It's very belittling, and you feel like you have nowhere to go. Being a brown person with a, you know, beard and turban in America, you still feel like the eyes are on you. I mean, there's not a moment that you don't. There's a lot of things that come with, you know, wearing a turban. Uniqueness, pride, a sense of identity, even a sense of fashion. This makes me different, and right now it makes me a target, but this is who I'm gonna be. It is me at the core. As I grew up, I realized instead of telling people, "Hey, don't pick on me," give them a reason to like you. First of all, that shouldn't even have to happen, right? That's the privilege of people that aren't Sikhs. Violins are like the queen of the orchestra. When I play on stage, you know, you have people watching you while you're playing. There's this sense of power. It just kind of feels like I can play anything.
That feeling of being empowered that Violinder has now as an adult is rare for many Sikh kids in America. almost 70% of Sikh children who wear turbans get bullied in school. But when did the violence against Sikh Americans begin? To answer that, let's go back to 1904.
In the Panama Canal, 22 years ago. First, we go to the bottom of things and find ourselves sidetracked on the floor of the world-famous Gaillard Cut.
The U.S. recruited workers to help build the Panama Canal. Some of them were Sikhs from India who later moved to the U.S. Here's Bay Area scholar and activist Jadeep Singh.
At that point, you actually did have anti-Sikh hate crime because the newspaper was talking about the tide of turbans, the ragheads arriving in large numbers.
The early Sikh immigrants harvested crops, chopped wood, and built railroads. They worked for lower wages than white workers, and racial tensions climbed and then erupted. In 1907, in Bellingham, Washington, a mob of angry white workers attacked hundreds of Sikhs. Soon after, the U.S. passed a law that banned Asians from entering the country. But in 1965, that all changed.
Immigration Act of 1965 removed 5 decades of racist immigration policy. In the aftermath of the civil rights movement, so it was black people dying and risking their lives in the streets that led directly to South Asians getting into this country in the first place.
After 1965, Sikh immigrants came to America in waves from their homeland. After the British colonized South Asia, they left a border. Like a great gash across the land, it split the Punjab region in half. West Punjab became Muslim Pakistan, and East Punjab became Hindu India. That left Sikhs stuck in between.
August the 15th, 1947, Independence Day for India.
My grandparents' generation fled across the Pakistan-India border to build a new life in a new nation. Most of their children grew up during the 1980s in India when a movement for Sikh independence took hold. The military and police shot thousands of Sikhs dead. The economy of Punjab was destroyed. So, my parents' generation became a second generation of immigrants, seeking refuge in a place called America. That's where I was born. My generation began life in a country that had once conspired against our being here at all. We were the third generation forced to learn resilience, like potatoes, growing in infertile soil. When Sikhs came to America from Punjab, they brought their language with them. Today, youth are organizing to keep Punjabi alive in America.
There are some words that are spoken in Punjabi that just don't exist in the English language. Like Jagara, it's a roar, it's a call to action. My name is Ramandeep Kaur. I'm the Bay Area community organizer for the Jagara movement.
The Jagara movement works to empower Sikh youth. One issue they're addressing, the growing fear in the Sikh community that the Punjabi language is dying.
I feel as though it's becoming more and more difficult to communicate with our elders and have meaningful conversations in our own language. You know, I'm fearful, like 10 years down the line, when I have children, I want to be able to teach them the language that I spoke with my grandfather.
So, Jagara organizes Sikh youth to advocate for Punjabi classes in their high schools.
In Bakersfield, they really wanted to have Punjabi as a language in one of their high schools. So the students, they had how many people? I think 1,500 people signed their petition in one day. Having Punjabi as a language, it'll help the students here who are raised in America to see, hey, my language is important.
Jagara also uses language to build political power. Last year, they registered voters in Sikh temples across California.
3,000 people, registered from the Punjabi community. As we were doing all of this, all the parents were asking us, well, can you help translate this? Or is the ballot going to be written in Punjabi? Will I be able to understand it?
Voting materials aren't available in Punjabi because there's no official record of how many Punjabi speakers are in the U.S. So, Jagara launched a campaign this year to change that.
resources such as voting rights and even materials around healthcare access get denied to the Punjabi community. And so we want to make sure that our community gets those resources.
As young Sikhs in America, we find ourselves translating Punjabi into English and English into Punjabi all the time. We aren't just translating words, but ideas, beliefs, and traditions. We're transitioning between worlds, acting as code switchers, like Jup Gill. Gill shaves his head, so he's bald, but sometimes he ties a turban. This is unusual because most Sikhs who tie turbans have long hair underneath. It means Gill can switch identities with ease. He says,
I definitely live between two worlds. It's like weird.
It's tricky living in that sliver of space between Punjab and America.
Take your laptops out. It's a bit by
as a big brown man, you know, with a beard, I get like racially profiled pretty much everywhere I go. Even at the airport, I like to slide in a joke or two. You know, I used to wear this shirt that said 100% randomly searched at the following airports with a map of literally every single airport on it. And every time I get patted down, I ask them if I have to tip for the massage, because it's really, it's an intense experience, especially nowadays, you know? If I pushed back on it with a violent, aggressive tone, I'd only get twice as much in return. Sometimes you have to swallow your pride a lot in order just to let somebody else feel powerful for a minute. And then over time, you chip away at their ego, at their sense of supremacy. My name is Jup Gill. I live in Fremont, California. I teach yoga full time.
Ready, take a deep inhale, lift. And exhale, hold. Inhale, lift. And exhale, hold. Try to get the toes to be eye level.
So, I mean, with Islamophobia in particular, there has been a direct impact on my life. So I was going to school in UC Irvine. I was doing Punjabi folk dance called Bhangra. We were dressed in our Bhangra outfits, very authentic, almost more authentic than your average Indian person in India. We just finished, it was 8-minute routine, so we just decided to go outside to get air. A group of people who were drinking in the restaurant next door. They called us ragheads, towelheads, camel jockeys, like typical racial slurs directed towards brown people. It kind of went down, right? Like, I definitely got kicked in the face once or twice. One of the guys, his turbans, they grabbed it, ripped it off and stuff.
I pledge allegiance to the flag.
When I see other bald white guys, it does bring back that memory where I do re-experience that rush of fear and anxiety.
USA. We're going flag shopping for American flags. They're staring at our turbans. They're calling them rags. They're calling them towels. They're calling them diapers.
So I grew up with my hair in kindergarten, because my dad yelled at me or something. I forget. I was like 5 or 6. He went to the bathroom. We were in India and I decided to cut my hair, right? And he comes out, he grabs a wooden chair and he throws it and it breaks. And I'm just like, oh man, I really did it this time, you know? I don't think he was prepared to deal with that type of emotional trauma as well, right? Like, he grew up in the 80s in India, Punjab, where people were literally getting killed because of their turban. And for him, it was such a huge source of pride. And then I decided to keep my hair. Eventually, I started keeping a turban. You know, I remember even in high school, like, I was so proud of the fact that I had a turban, that I had a long beard. And then I hit that stage in life where, you know, I was balding and I cut it. I didn't understand how big and profound it would be to other people, right? One of my really good friends, he was offended. Like, it hurt him seeing a brother of his, kind of like a fallen brother almost. And I do feel that when I wear a turban, I command attention. But I also feel that if you're wearing a turban, you're reflecting the entire Sikh community. And that should be a determinant in how you behave. The whole purpose of wearing a turban, right, is like now you have the community behind you. That if somebody does attack you, they attack the community at large. And everywhere you go, you represent the Sikh community. And yeah, not just you, but 25 million people in the world. And I think that's a very awesome responsibility.
Growing up, I didn't tie a turban. I used to have a long braid that other kids pulled relentlessly. Not many Sikh women wear turbans, or the stars. But after I graduated from high school, I decided that I would. I wanted to represent my community. I wanted to feel the presence of a divine spirit, to wrap the stories and sacrifices of my ancestors around my head each day before I went out into the world. I didn't want to inhabit an individual body, but a communal one. I wanted my ancestors by my side at every moment. I wanted to be something more than a person. I wanted to be a symbol.
You're listening to I Ain't Here for No Reason, a documentary exploring the lives of Sikh American youth in the Bay Area. It's produced by KALW reporter Kaval Roop Kaur Singh. Now back to the show.
Long ago in Punjab, before the birth of the Sikh spiritual tradition, only kings wore turbans. Then came the Sikh spiritual teachers, or gurus. In 1699, the 10th Sikh guru created a new and distinct community where all were royal, where all could wear the stars, or turbans, regardless of caste, class, or color. A community that would act collectively as a sword, striking at the heart of oppression and injustice. And so, Sikhs, like the United States, were born from revolution. Gatka is a martial art that trains Sikhs to fight oppression. Gatka players use swords, wooden sticks, nets, and shields in a style of mock combat training. They wear long blue robes called cholas. Gatka players are traditionally men, but some, like Bujakar, are women. As a woman playing Gatka, she's upending tradition while preserving it, resisting oppression as a woman and as a warrior.
Gatka is not like a lot of other martial arts. You know, we connect with our history because of it. And to be doing something that our ancestors did, it kind of made me feel like I am what they are also. Like, we are the same people. We have that same blood in our veins. We have that same connection. My name is Bujakar. I'm a student at Chabot College. I'm 19 years old. I guess I always looked up to kids who played Gatka. Properly, I started learning when I was 10, 11 years old. At that time, I was one of like 3 or 4 girls at Gatka practice. And on the days that we have Gatka camp, I'll wear a chola. It's a robe with buttons. Being in a chola, I guess, I feel like I have a family. It really gives you confidence and like you can walk with your head held high. I'm wearing a chola that usually men wear. Being a woman in a chola, it's like a rebellious thing to do. And it's always felt like, you know, we were foreigners in schools. Sometimes I'll have like the worst day ever, but going to Gatka practice has always felt like home. There were a few times at school where, like, some kid would touch my dastar. Like, I remember my mom growing up, she'd be like, if anybody touches you, smack the shit out of them. I remember in 8th grade, some kid tried to touch my dastar, and he was, like a foot smaller than I was. He was, like, saying, like, Gandhi, Gandhi, behind my back. So I turned around and I told him, stop. And he wouldn't stop. And then he was, like, behind me, and I turned around and backhanded him, like, in the face. After that, he never looked me in the eye again. For a while, I didn't play Gatka. It made me insane. You know, it was depression, and I didn't know how to deal with anything. I felt powerless. Sometimes when I'll feel alone, I'll feel like I don't have anyone, but it's like I come from a huge army of people, a part of Sikh history. Sikhs are known to be a minority for so long, always fighting, never stopping the fight against injustice and oppression. Just a woman playing Gatka, she doesn't even have to be good, but just being in that space gives her power. It might be intimidating for some men to feel like, you know, in this space, a woman has power. Like, she has just as much power as I do. I hope it's intimidating, because, shoot, I ain't here for no reason.
When I hear stories like these, I think of a hymn in Sikh scripture written by the 15th century mystic poet Bhagat Ravi Das. It describes the discovery of a place called Begumpura. Begumpura is a place without sorrow or suffering, where all are able to worship as they choose, where all are equal and content and free. It isn't necessarily a real place. It's more like a state of mind. But striving for Begumpura, both in the material world and in the mind's world, is what it means to me to be a Sikh American today. That's what these stories of Sikh American youth are about. Begumpura is what the United States of America should be, what it is supposed to be. Hostile to none, home to all. For Cross Currents, this is Kamalroop Kaur Singh.
You've been listening to I Ain't Here for No Reason, a documentary exploring the lives of Sikh American youth in the Bay Area by KALW reporter Kamalroop Kaur Singh. She's a recent graduate of our 9-month training program, The Audio Academy. That piece was edited by Lisa Morehouse. You can listen to it in its entirety at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Gabriel Greshler, Angela Johnston, Zoe Liu, Ariel Plotnick, Marissa Ortega-Welch, Judy Silber, Jackie Sajiko, and Andrew Stelzer. The show is engineered by James Rowland. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Jen Chien is our managing editor. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet.